All right, buddy. On the podcast, also on YouTube, great episode for you. Hit us with the beats.
We're talking about the rotation coming up, a gluttony of talent, and yet it comes at a price. Are some of the young stars on the Brooklyn Nets going to suffer at the hands of the veteran addition? Plus, sore muscles, I guess, is also a big talking point.
It's all here for you on the podcast today. 240 minutes and way overboard on a home project from yesterday. You're going to hear about it all, but after the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast and the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I'm Doug Norrie, owner, operator, DFSR.com. Football's getting started. If you're putting in lineups on FanDuel and or DraftKings, head on over to DFSR.com, get some projections over there. And that is Adam Armbrecht, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster, also the host of the One Giant Podcast. He's getting you ready for football as well with his boy, Andy Mack. Buddy, how are we doing on a Friday?
I feel good. I feel powerful. And I feel like there's still more questions here after having our conversations around moving off DeAndre Jordan, bringing in Millsap, bringing in LMA. Now the question is, how do these rotations play themselves after the Brooklyn Nets this season? And are some of our young stars going to find themselves waiting in the wings?
I just feel sore. Because yesterday, Adam's going to skate right over this right here. But Adam made an absolute hero effort yesterday, came and helped me with the deck project that I was working on. I estimated the project at 5 hours, again, based on almost nothing, except me looking at the deck and thinking five sounds about right.
A can-do spirit.
Lasted about 10, job still not done. And I don't want to say like a younger version of myself would have looked at this version of myself with some sort of abhorrence slash embarrassment around how difficult I made things sound around the physical effort of it. So maybe that's like worming its way into where I am today. But I just feel sore. I mean, I'm ready to talk about the Nets front court because that's it. But I'm just letting you know on a physical level, this guy's getting old. I don't tell you, this guy can't put in the same level of in the 90 degree heat that he used to be able to do without complaining pretty incessantly.
You know, I was monitoring that pretty closely about how many times I brought up the heat, the state that my body was physically in, because at a certain threshold, you go, all right, buddy, yeah, I know. I asked you to come here and help me. Now you're just kind of belaboring it. We have to get through it, which we did. And we'll circle back on it because you mentioned the front court for the Brooklyn Nets, and it's a crowded room now. So We mentioned it on one of the last episodes about Nicholas Claxton and how, I mean, is he going to have minutes? That was kind of the cliffhanger we left it with, and or what is possibly a new role going to look like for him. What's your initial take? Because I think there is a path for him to find a role on this team that will look different than last year, but this is probably one of those things where you always total up the minutes in a game and everybody has to get their bite at the basketball, and at some point you go, oh, there's just not enough left for you. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, so, okay, so we mentioned this sort of tangentially or in passing on the previous two episodes where we talked about the DeAndre Jordan trade, and we talked about then, kind of more importantly, the Millsap signing and then the LaMarcus Aldridge signing, where we talked about how, you know, that's all of a sudden the Nets went from a situation with, I think we'd still gone into the season saying front court was still a need for the team. Size, overall relative size, was still a need for the team. When over the course of a weekend, it all of a sudden started looking overcrowded. Like we were in a situation where there was almost too many guys. And my first reaction after the reaction was like, okay, that the DeAndre trade was great, the Millsap signing great, Aldridge signing great. Every single one of those moves across the board, total A-pluses for the Nets. Yep. After we get past that grading system, though, we have to look really at, you know, developmentally where the Nets can even find minutes to be able to bring along a guy like Claxton. I forget Darren Sharp, right? I don't even know where that lands. And you probably have, I know you have some thoughts on that, but I have real, real concerns at this point that there is not a clear path to Claxton playing significant minutes short of Nets really deciding to go all in on rest during the regular season. That's a possibility. Or injuries, which is also a possibility when you factor in the age of these guys. Yep. But I know Nets fans want nothing to be excited about Claxton. We are too. Athletically, he's great. But when you look at this roster now, there's a significant numbers crunch happening now that wasn't happening as of midweek last week. Yeah. and the odd man out in my mind is probably going to be Claxton.
Yeah, so quickly, you mentioned De'Ron Sharpe. I think we had our concerns around him ahead of the draft, and you get all these glowing reviews about his shooting, touch, whatever. The Nets make these moves, get rid of DeAndre, bring in Millsap, bring in LMA. That's it. De'Ron Sharpe is going to be an in-the-background developing, and that's fine, but you can go ahead and dismiss the idea of him having kind of a real role on this team, and I don't think that's a good thing. You'd rather be having these veteran players on this squad. From a Claxton standpoint, now I think what you need to look at is where does his skill set fit in and complement the players that you've brought in? Because we currently are going to have now, in this positionless, but 4-5-ish, LMA, Millsap, Blake Griffin back there as well, and then you put Kevin Durant just into that mix. So those are four bodies there. And the question becomes, where can Nick Claxton fit as a complement piece to those players on the floor? And I think you fleshed out what, right at the top, makes or does not make sense from the combos, unless starting with Kevin Durant, right? Who can play with him, and almost anybody can, but then how some of these guys can't play with one another.
Okay, so right. So when it comes to positions of basketball, there's been sort of a changing of the guard around how teams view positions. And it's very easy when you create a depth chart as a fan to create a depth chart that says, this guy's a center, this guy's a power forward, this guy's some all forward, this guy's shooting guard, this guy's point guard. And for some players, it's very obvious where they land. Like, Steph Curry is just a point guard, okay? Right? Like, there's Trae Young is a point guard. Joel Embiid is a center. Those guys, when we talk about positionless pieces, there's a lot of fluidity, but not necessarily all the way around on every player. The problem is, I think sometimes when the Nets fans look at this Nets roster, they say to themselves, oh, we have these two guys, these three guys are centers, these three guys are power forwards, and you know, these are small forwards and shooting guards and point guards. In practice, it does not look like that. These guys don't necessarily, like, so I'll give you on Nets, Billy Reinhardt, he's the best. He's a really, really good guy. He's been on this podcast a bunch. This is not me taking a shot at him. I'm just going to break down how he viewed the Nets positional depth chart. I would generally agree with this, but I'm going to point out why it's problematic. So starters, Harden, Irving, Durant, Millsap, Aldridge. Okay, I think that's fine. Whatever, we argue with about where Joe Harris is going to be. But then when you look at the list, he's got Millsap and then Griffin as a power forward, then James Johnson. Okay, hard to argue. Aldridge is a center, Claxton is a center, De'Ron Sharpe is a center. Hard to argue. The problem is, in the old way of viewing basketball, teams would play their centers and their power forwards together because that was just how the position sort of broke down, mm-hmm. and this is what you would just do because you had a power forward and you had a power center, and sometimes you would throw out the window whether that was actually the right combination to play.
Right.
It's proven out that it's not because so many teams have so much fluidity around it. So I guess my long-winded point here is when you look at the depth chart for the Nets now, you can talk yourself into, well, these three guys are centers, these four guys are power forwards, and this is how they're going to get all the minutes out of them. But I just can't see it working that way. Yep. In actual, when they actually put it into action. And I can get more into that. Does that make sense? I can explain it more, but like, does that make sense what I'm saying first about, like, there's a very much a difference between what you get what you are labeled as on just the media guide about what position you play as compared to how that actually translates to real life basketball minutes, because it doesn't really translate, I think, a lot of the way fans think that it does.
Yeah, because a given, whatever, labeled as a center, a given center, okay, but they have different skill sets. So those complement the rest of your roster in different ways. So every time that you bring in player X, positionless, once you bring in this player, okay, how is the rest of the group around them balanced out? So to the point, we always talk from the top down here, well, Kevin Durant, well, what if the Nets want to go super small ball and put Kevin Durant at the five? Now what balances off behind him? You don't just automatically say, well, where's my power forward group and who am I going to put out there with him, or vice versa? So 100%. Labeling these guys is what you have to do, so to speak, when you look at, you said, the player guide. But it really means nothing. It's about the best combination of five players on the court, regardless of if they're labeled as six centers on a five-man team. I do math, or likewise. You know what I mean?
100%. And I have a couple more thoughts. Adam and I can explain this a little better, and even in terms of last season, about why. And I think to kind of paint the picture of why there's real concerns about Claxton specifically here, and maybe some other guys as well. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online. It's that time of year again. Eyes are turning to the aforementioned football teams are back on the gridiron to start the season. As always, Bet Online is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. You can get all the updated odds, props, and contests. They have online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest. Go get in on that. Also, the world's largest $200,000 NFL Survivor Contest. You sweat out picking a winner each week. It's all over at Bet Online. You head on over to Bet Online right now. You sign up today. It's got to be a new account for this. You're going to get 100% welcome bonus, but you have to use the promo code LOCKEDON, just like our podcast network. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports, football, basketball, boxing, even Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the great offers for this 2021 season. Bet Online, promo code Locked On. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
And I'm certain this sounds familiar to everyone. You've got one device that lets you catch the games live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports and highlights on your phone, and you're begging your next door neighbor for the login to all the other streaming services to get in on the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and it's a great and easy way where you finally get your TV all together. It's called DirecTV Stream. And it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch all your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes and no more going to buy another device ever again. And the best part is there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible devices required. Content varies by package. And speaking of packages, Doug, before we get into, because I do think I have a thought around how Nicholas Claxton can still find minutes and find a role on this team, but go back to last year and specifically around this positionless basketball or balancing the rotations and why it isn't just one-to-one of here's your position, here's your minute share.
Okay, so it's very easy, actually, and this is a way that's going to play out. This is going to show, I think, Nets fans about sort of what I'm talking about. Guys that kind of played center for the Nets last year. Okay, Blake Griffin, we obviously saw him play center in the playoffs because that's who they started effectively at the position. He was great, whatever. Other players that play center at times, which is meaning there's five guys on the court and who's basically guarding the other team's center or being put into that situation the most? Jeff Green. Okay, no one's labeling him as a center. So, you know, you could talk about whether he's a power forward or a small forward. Bruce Brown played offensive center, right? Like he would start a lot of his actions sort of top of the key, foul line extended. We saw him roll to the basket a lot. No one in no world situation would ever label him a center. This is why the depth chart piece gets thrown out the window very, very quickly. Yep. Is because we just saw this put into practice around this team last season. Now, maybe you want to say, well, they were forced into that situation because they had no other options. I can hear that. The problem is Nick Claxton was on this team during those situations, right? And we already saw sort of how that played out. So, I could say to myself, well, let me guess about Paul Millsap's rotations. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been on the team before. I can make a guess. Aldridge, we saw a little of it, right? We saw a little of where they stood with him. Claxton was on this team the whole time. and all they did was fill the roster with guys who could probably play instead of him.
Yeah.
And I think that is, and I hate to say it that way, but because I really, really want to see what he can become. But does that mean, do you feel the same way? I'm just starting to get very, when I look at this, I'd say, like, what is the path for him to stay on this team? I just don't, especially coming up with the contract next year, it's a very weird time for him.
Well, and it's funny too, because you do mention the contract, and the one side piece here is, like, I think a lot of Nets fans and conversations are around, remember, he's coming up for an extension. Should the Nets want to do that? You think back to the Jared Allen in very different skill sets, all that stuff. I think that Nick Claxton is, his development and upside is far different and potentially more impactful long term on any team than Jared Allen. Jared Allen, a bit that traditional kind of rim protector guy, doesn't have the outside shot. I think that Allen projects to develop in that vein, whereas the defensive versatility alone, I think, is a nicer upside piece. Plus the fact the extension's talking about, I can't remember, it's a $50 million or something like that. The numbers are far less impactful than what Allen ended up signing ultimately in Cleveland. The funny thing is that if my first take was, yes, this has become crowded, but even with all these players that they've brought in, Nicholas Claxton does still offer versatility defensively. He can defend any position on the floor. Now, he's still going to get beat up by some of the bigger bodies, per se, in and around the basket, but you can use him in a lot of unique ways. So the switching becomes better. LMA is going to struggle in that area of the game. Blake Griffin, while I think played very admirably, you also look at that and say there's going to be some limitations where you can move him to. So you start to think you can balance the books a little bit with Claxton and put him in there. The funny thing that you just brought up about last year, playing Bruce Brown out of position. Well, all of a sudden, when you bring in Millsap, LMA, return Griffin, you have Kevin Durant. Okay, Bruce Brown is going to, I would think, be able to settle back into a much more traditional guard role, and then you can use him specifically in defensive matchups because that's what he excels at, which ironically actually does diminish some of the positionless basketball value of a Nicholas Claxton because you go, okay, is Claxton a bigger body? He can obviously defend to the rim more than Bruce Brown can. But in terms of where these players plug in, all of a sudden you have more balanced defensive value across this roster too, which diminishes what the strongest piece of his game is in Nicholas Claxton, and that's being able to pick anybody up on that side of the floor. I still do believe, though, that his rebounding is probably a pretty unique skill set relative to even the other guys that you've brought in here in terms of the bigs. But you mentioned even, I'm circling myself here, because you mentioned last episode how James Harden is one of the best rebounding guards in the game. So it's this weird, there's this real weird swath of skill sets and talents that they've brought in for this season, where to your point, Claxton is talented enough to warrant minutes, but I don't know if the Nets are going to feel like they need to give him the minutes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, see, this is where they might, and by the way, this is like what you would call an embarrassment of riches around your team. These are the good kinds of problems to have. This is the exact opposite of what the Nets were dealing with last year, which is to say we can't even find functional bodies to be able to effectively throw out there for long minute stretches because we're so banged up that we just can't. Like, what's the solution here? We got to play Blake a lot. Jeff Green can't play. Bruce Brown's like effective in some ways, but it's really hard for him against the Bucks, right? Like they were having all kinds of other problems on the opposite ends of the spectrum last year. They cured a lot of that, at least on paper right now. So this is not a complaint about that. This is more of a, you know, where does it fit in? You mentioned James Harden. It's interesting about him. One thing that is interesting about Claxton is Harden is so good about working with dynamic athletic bigs that playing with Harden more, like, you can make a real case to keep making sure that he plays with Harden as much as possible because Harden unlocks so much around what bigs, athletic rim-running bigs can do that, and I wouldn't, like, call Aldridge and Millsap those kind of guys necessarily, even though I think that he can help them.
But Claxton's the only athletic big on this team, you would argue, right?
Yeah, probably. I guess I was going to call Blake sort of in that same mold, but I think you're correct. Right. So in terms of just sheer athleticism, yes, he is probably the most athletic. He's the least skilled by far of that group. So I don't think that's even under debate. But his minutes would look great if he could be paired, because his games with Harden last year were really, really good.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at the times where Harden was actually, when they were actually able to share the court, like back in in March, Claxton had some of his best games, like a couple 16 point games, bunch of rebounds, an 11 and 8. You know, this is when Harden is actually on the court playing a lot of minutes, and was dominating sort of the offensive side of the ball and running the offense like that. We saw really great minutes from Claxton, very exciting stuff from Claxton during that time, and that is really one to one attributable to what James Harden can do. Because we talked about it before, James Harden just is like, he's the big man unlocker. Like if you have hands and can finish above the rim at all, then he is going to make you look awesome. And that's where I hope that they don't maybe lose sight of that when it comes to Claxton, because I think that among that group, Harden can unlock him the most, and yet he still is fourth in line in terms of minutes. So I'm not even sure they'll ever feel the need to actually do it.
Yeah, and this is where I wonder if the investment, like you said, well, are you resting some of the veterans throughout the course of the season? But I think this is where the value of utilizing him, and why I would have made the case for using him more last year, even if it was through some struggles, because you're going to find spots even in the playoffs where, again, his skill set would make a lot of sense, even for a small sample size, whatever, but only if you've invested the time to make sure that that's solved science so you know you can rely on him in those spots. If you truncate him and you kind of stash him on the bench all year, well, then it becomes less and less likely as you get down the stretch that you think you'll see any of him in the playoffs. And when you think about these players that they've added, again, Claxton is still a nice complementary skill set that I think has value, probably arguably more so in playoff basketball for key spots than at any point during the regular season.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And so, again, we're talking about, and they're just, the Nets are so stacked at this point that this is the kind of problems you have to sort of make up for your, make up for yourself around where their roster is going. We'll close out some of these roster thoughts heading into the weekend. First, you were dealing with car issues right now. You were thinking about going to the local chain place to go get a part for your car. Maybe you're a do-it-yourselfer out there. Look, you got a computer, you got a cell phone. That's effectively all the car, the local place is using themselves. You're telling them to make a model of your car. They're typing in the make and model of your car. You're telling them the part you need. They're just going to type in the part you need. And the one difference is being they're going to go back into the back of the store and try to find it for you in some maybe unmarked box, whereas you can just see it right there on Rock Auto, know what the price is, and know that it's 30 or 50% better than those local chain stores. Rock Auto is also a family-owned business serving those do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Rock Auto prices reliably low for every customer. They have everything you need. Car parts, a lot of parts in a car. More than 10, less than 10,000, somewhere in there. If I'm just rounding, you go to rockauto.com right now. You see all the parts available for your car or truck right locked on. And how did you hear about us? So they know that we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
And of course, no matter when Nicholas Claxton gets on the floor for the Brooklyn Nets, you know he'll be ready. And if he needs that little boost of energy, he's going for Built Bars. Why? Because they're delicious. It's a protein bar that has great texture and flavor without any of that weird kind of cardboardy version you get from some other products. Delicious flavors, as I say, like coconut, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate from my man Doug. I'm more of a salted caramel man myself. Strawberry, orange, cookies, and cream. And not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're also healthy too. 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories just 130 to 180, for only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy for you, friends. For me, you can head over right now and get them. My personal flavor this week is actually a little bit of German chocolate. And Built Bar is always ready for you with an offer. As you can go to built.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 15% off your first order. Promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off at built.com. The other piece that I will say, so there's the one part of it. Actually, my mind flashed back to when Claxton was first developing and you and I were speculatively hoping in a preseason games that maybe Claxton will shoot from the perimeter. That never quite developed for us. It's almost funny because that would have been the ultimate piece as a complimentary player like him. If you had a little bit of a perimeter shot, now you're really creating value for yourself. The other thing that I think is interesting when we talk about this roster is as it stands right now, there's a lot of these other bodies that came in, right? Demboya came in from Detroit in that trade. You have Bembry on the roster still right now. I'm not going to get into, say, Kessler Edwards, you know, rookie on a two-way. But how those positions, then James Johnson, throw him in there as well. How those players, what happens with all of those players? Are they all on this roster? Are some of them getting moved? Do you need to create it to finalize your roster for the regular season? Theoretically, if a couple of those bodies aren't here, now Claxton, again, in a very different role, is still going to have a minute share in every game when somebody needs X amount of rest. And so that's the difference too, because some of these other players, like a Bembry, again, he has great defensive upside. He has versatility, plays at a smaller position, but you can use him in that same capacity. And not the problem, but if you look at this and say the Nets saw what happened last year, they went ahead and made themselves a very deep team, brought in a lot of veteran talent. Every indication here is that the Nets are leaning veteran heavy, and that is what Claxton is not. And that's probably the biggest indication of saying, is he going to have an opportunity to get out there on the court? So, I mean, do you see some of these other names as being bodies that may or may not be here? Are any of these guys flyer guys that the Nets could quickly move off of? And if they stay, does that impact where Claxton's role is here? And I'll even throw in an extra caveat. I mean, is there a world where, because we know Claxton is coming up for an extension potentially, that the Nets are also looking at him as just like a Jared Allen? We built up his value. Now we can move him for something if we want to and continue to tweak this roster.
Yeah, I thought about that, and I kind of didn't want to say it because I don't know, it'd be a bummer. But that is the other thing to think about here. And so where the Nets are right now is they still have, I think they're one or two guys over on their roster size right now. Yeah. And the conventional wisdom says that Jahlil Okafor is going to get cut, and I think that's probably correct. I think the other guy to probably go is DeAndre Bembry. He has a non-guaranteed contract. That would be the easiest money to get off of and not really cause you too much impact to the your cap hit. So he probably logically is the next one to go. But in terms of just having even more depth everywhere, so I should probably not say, I was thinking this before as we were talking about it, I shouldn't call this positionless basketball. We should call it more like position fluidity, because there are still positions. Like we just said, Joel Embiid is not going to play point guard, right? Steph Curry is not playing center. We know these things to be true. And so as long as you can say those things definitively, then you can't say it's positionless, because I just said that this one guy can't play the one position, right? So like we have to agree. I'm going back and reforming my original claim, which is this position list. I'm going to call it position fluid.
And front court, back court.
Front
right?
court, back
I think
court.
Is also even, it breaks up a bit too.
Even that,
gets, even that, I know even that was a bit of a, that's a bit blurry.
So where I'm going with that is where players tend to lose, the guys who tend to lose minutes in this new form of basketball is like, kind of like, unless you're elite, the bigger you are, your minutes start to fall off. This is what happens for every team. This is why centers have become sort of not undervalued. They become sort of, everyone just swaps around these starting centers now in the offseason for the most part, because there's just a bunch of these guys. When it comes down to it, very few of them can actually stay on the court when it really counts. And when you look at how minutes break down on a basketball team, where those minutes start to get cut is around the starting center and the backup centers, because you just find other ways to play, right? We have this exact example from last year with this very team. Now, maybe you want to say, Never mind. I rounded myself into this point, because they had a guy who was a only can play center guy, and that guy did not sniff the court for the last 15 games of the season, and they just had to give away like 8 second round draft picks to get off the contract in DeAndre Jordan. So if you're trying to look at where minutes get cut, this is where they get cut. The closer you get to only being a 5 is the closer you get to having your minutes cut, unless you are absolutely elite. Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid. I guess I'm going to throw Gobert in there. It's close, because he got basically almost played off the court in the playoffs last year, right? So unless you're those guys that are clearly just centers, that is where the minutes come. That is where the minutes disappear the fastest. And Claxton is, he's pretty darn close to just that, right? And so it just becomes 240 minutes for a team in a basketball game. And if you're looking where the numbers start to fall off, it's around that position.
And I wonder too, because I'm sure I'm going to try to offer you the opportunity to do the slow math in the background here. When you think about, if I say in the 240 minutes, I'm going to earmark Aldrich for 20, yeah, you know, 20 to 25 at most, like 20 for him, 20 for Millsap, 20 for Griffin. Does that start to massage a minute share for a player like Claxton? Because none of those guys are going to be players that get that 30 to 35 minute run with consistency. Now you have to look in then to the backcourt and how they're going to utilize Bruce Brown. And we know that in theory, Irving and Harden are both going to be earmarked for 30 to 35, as is Kevin Durant. So that's the space where I wonder if there is 15-ish minutes for Nicholas Claxton in this. And then the other piece is that I will say, when you look at LMA and you look at Millsap, Griffin is the outlier here. And this is actually probably which is what's damning for Nicholas Claxton's minutes as well. Because Blake Griffin, as you said, maybe he's not going to be hard fast to that role that he brought to the team last year, but he is a rebounding guy. He is, out of those three players, probably the most athletic for whatever that's worth now. And that's the piece where when you have this much offensive talent on a team, not every team can, almost very few teams can do this, where you can just sacrifice pure defense out of one position. And that's probably the extra piece. Can you sacrifice 15 minutes a game? And I say sacrifice not negatively, but can you give 15 minutes a game to a player who's going to rebound, run the floor, be able to get at the rim, and play defense with a versatility? If you feel like you can always plug that in with shooting and scoring around them, then I think it is okay. And unlike DeAndre Jordan last year, I think Nicholas Claxton still does have a lot of offensive upside. The question is, how much has that developed from last year to this year? How much can it develop over the course of the season? He's going to need to show you that he's not James Harden dependent to be successful offensively, as opposed to saying, well, only if we're out running the floor and I'm in space can I be effective. You're going to need to be able to, we'll say this, work the pick and roll. One of the reasons why DJ was used so much during the regular season last year is because he was at least effective in that role at the top of the key. Claxton's going to need to show court awareness, spatial awareness on the offensive end to increase that value as well.
Yeah, so even just back of the napkin math on the minutes looks even probably worse. Now that I've actually just...
I wasn't sure when I laid it out. I was like, this could either go... I could be leading him into a great point or saying, actually, no, man, maybe 3 minutes is probably the number.
Yeah, it might be. We'll run this really quick because we're going to start go over. We'll break this down a little bit more, clearer lines next week because there's a lot to unpack here at the end. Even being very reasonable around the Nets minutes, I got to like 220 minutes and I hadn't even put in Cam Thomas, James Johnson, Nick Claxton, and a few other guys even into the mix. Right. And I was at 220 already. And that was even being conservative around the bigs. Because like who's not losing minutes? Durant's not losing minutes. Kyrie's not losing minutes. James Harden's not losing minutes. Okay. So we can all agree on that. The other three veterans are going to want to play too. I can't imagine any of them came back here to do 10 minutes a game. Right. So you have to think, I think your reasonable assessment around 20 is probably the low point for any one of those guys. And you have to just, I stayed at your 20, but if you trend higher, you can start to see where this is going. So that's 60, 90, 120, 150, 160. I said 35 minutes for the superstars. Like that's like 175 just for that group. Then you get Joe Harris in there. Okay. That's that 25 plus at least. You get Bruce Brown back in there. You get Patty Mills back in there. Yeah. All of a sudden, that number is sitting at like I was just doing this on this thing. That's sitting around 220 right now. That's 20 minutes left. That's if you're all healthy, okay? So I get that this doesn't work. Guys are going to rest and whatnot. You're sitting 20 minutes left in the game for those other guys that we want to see play. And this is why I'm saying when you start looking at it this way, it really becomes a situation where it's just a numbers game. Like there's just no more numbers because some guys, just their numbers are not moving. Kevin Durant, in a regular game, right. Kevin Durant's, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving's minutes are not moving, right? And those other three veterans, those are probably not moving either. And so when you look at that, you just run out of time. I don't know. Like, yeah. I would say one
and
thing.
The only, go ahead. Bruce Brown. You say Bruce Brown, his minutes are probably flexible coming to this year. New role for him. So maybe, and I'm not trying to make the case.
By the way, had him at 10 minutes in this scenario.
Yep. So there you go. Because I was going to say, like, if you take a look at him and you throw in Javon Carter and you throw in Cam Thomas and you say, well, that's anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes, maybe altogether, could be 30, in totality. But depending on where that needle falls, that's where maybe you find this niche. And the bottom line being is, in almost every scenario, you'd probably make the case for one of those players to get a run here, some minute shares there, maybe as opposed to a Nicholas Claxton. And I guess it'll be interesting to see, man, because if Claxton ends up in a garbage time kind of role or off day role when some of the stars or bigs need rest, you can still find value there over the course of the season, but it would certainly be a vast difference from where his trajectory was just a season ago.
Look, I don't know how to estimate how long it takes to replace a deck in your backyard. What I do know, what I do know how to estimate is how minutes break down around NBA lines. I've done this as an everyday full-time job for like the last 7 years. I do know how this breaks down, and this is just kind of what happens. And I'm not trying to be pessimistic about it because I love Claxton, but just go add it up yourselves. go add up what minutes you think each guy should play every game. Set it to minus 240 and start subtracting it off and see what you're left with and see what reasonable number for a healthy team is left. And this is what happens when you're a really, really great team. Their Nets are totally stacked. So
what a bummer on such a positive thing.
Oh, it's what happens when you're a really good team. By the way, we're probably going to be here in like March, and so thankful that the Nets have so much depth because they're dealing with six injuries. And this is the beginning of the season stuff. I get the thing. Look, the situation changed. The Nets dealt with so many injuries last year. It's bound to happen again. They're pretty long in the tooth. So there's going to be opportunities. I'm just saying to start the year, don't expect this to Maybe we'll be happy to have the depth later, I'm sure. Okay, look, I didn't mention at the top, but we're also doing all this on YouTube now. You got to go visit our Locked On Nets YouTube channel. It's up and running. A lot of hits on our first couple of videos, so we're really, really excited about that. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel as well, just like you're subscribing to the podcast wherever you listen. These episodes will be going up there. You'll be able to see our pretty faces as I work through my sore muscle injuries today. But it's all the link for the YouTube channel will be in the show notes. So make sure you just click over there, hit subscribe, and you'll get us every day over on YouTube.
Yeah, you better believe it, man. I don't know if visually rubbing, you know, icy hot on my body during the show is going to be good or bad, but we'll test the waters. We talk about balancing the roster, friends. Nature is about balance. All the world comes in pairs, yin and yang, right and wrong, men and women. What is pleasure without pain? Angie Jolie.
Oh, one of the all-time great poets. Better when she was with Brad Pitt. We'll be back again. No. We'll be back again next week talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.